Coming to you from the bottom of Lake Agassiz, welcome to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. I'm a biologist for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. If you're new to the program, glad to have you climbing aboard for the next hour. We'll be exploring the outdoors in a different little way, shape, and form than you maybe are familiar with. If you're a regular listener, glad to have you back with us this weekend. It's always a fun time to talk a little bit more in depth on the outdoors. Many of you hear the daily Outdoors Live updates at 6:20 with myself and the Big Kahuna, giving you a taste, usually two or three little news bits of the day from the outdoors. But on the weekend edition, we can explore a little more in depth, and it's not the typical outdoors program. With all due respect, I'm not saying this is right. I'm just explaining that this is different. You won't find the 10 tips to catch more walleyes this weekend. You won't hear explanations as to this is the latest gadget you've got to get. There's a lot of that out there, and I enjoy listening to that. But this is the one program where you can hear some of the biologists, the game wardens, the fisheries managers, and an explanation of the work that they do and insight into what's going on outdoors in North Dakota. So with that, we will be bringing you Brett Weedman. Is a native of North Dakota. He grew up on the north side of Fargo. He is a Fargo North graduate and went to college at NDSU with myself. And I'm proud to say that I can call Brett Weedman a coworker, a classmate, and also a friend as well. I have a lot of respect for Brett Weedman. His mother babysat my nephew. How much more can you get into it? But going into the professional side of it, Brett Weedman was one of those guys in college that I looked up to. Very, very intense, driven, very studious, a great student, a curve buster, if you may. And I say that with all due respect as well. Brett Weedman has one of the best jobs. There's one bighorn sheep biologist in North Dakota, and Brett Weedman is that guy. And Brett Weedman is our guest on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. With that introduction, Brett, I want to clear the table and welcome you to the program and welcome some of the newest wildlife residents to North Dakota. Right, Brett?
Yeah, we just returned 6 days ago with captured 25 bighorn sheep from near Jasper National Park in Alberta.
Brett, is that where the North Dakota bighorn sheep originated from?
Our sheep came from British Columbia in 1956, and then a few subsequent transplants. And then after that, we went to Montana, Idaho, and Oregon. But this would be our first trip to Alberta. Yep. Say it's at least a year-long process. This is about 18 months of planning and permits and applications and a lot of stress and late nights and that sort of thing. A lot of work dealing with a lot of federal agencies on the U.S. side, state agencies on the U.S. side, federal, provincial agencies on the Canadian sides.
I suppose we don't stop and think about the paperwork, the veteran, the certification that has to be done. It's not like you just go out there, get them, and come back with them. There's a lot of work that's involved behind the scenes, isn't there?
Exactly. It kind of begins with permission from the Director of Game and Fish, Terry Steinwand, and approval. And from there, it goes to the Board of Animal Health in North Dakota for we need permission to import these sheep from the state. And then, permission from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, U.S. Customs, USDA. And then also in Canada, Canadian Federal Food Inspection Agency, which is kind of counterpart of USDA and some provincial agencies as well.
Brett Weedman, bighorn sheep biologist for North Dakota Game and Fish, explaining the latest transplant of bighorn sheep into North Dakota. Give us a better understanding of why you go where you go.
Okay, well, if you recall, in 2006 and 2007, we introduced bighorn sheep from the Breaks of Montana, which were big, robust, large-bodied sheep. And originally, the sheep that came in, we introduced them from west of the Rockies. They're smaller bodies, adapted to warmer climates, not the severe winters we see here. And it was kind of 40 years of struggling, to be honest with you. They just weren't well adapted to this landscape. So in 2006, 2007, we translocated sheep from the Brakes of Montana, large-bodied stock, and actually did a five-year research program comparing how they do compared to our sheep that had been here for 50 years, and they far surpassed our expectations. I mean, great lamb recruitment, robust population growth. Basically, they're big, and so when we get these 35 below and 18 inches of snow, you know, those Montana sheep would sit up on the hill in the wind and not a worry in the world. Subsequently, that source population, that was the last stock we could get from Montana. And I got to eat a little bit of humble pie, but Nebraska, Game and Parks, they inquired of getting these sheep from Alberta for Nebraska. And I, you know, talking to my colleagues down there, I thought, boy, you can't bring those sheep from, they're known as Cattlemen sheep. I mean, it's Jasper National Park, you know, high alpine. And I thought, boy, bring them down to the low elevation, dusty plains of the Northern Plains.
Sure.
Nebraska brought them down, and they did extremely well. Very high, like 80% lamb recruitment, which is off the charts. So Nebraska introduced them 2 years ago. So subsequently, I sort of approached the Alberta folks about, say, how do you think they do in North Dakota? They said, I think they do fine. So that kind of began the process. These are the largest bighorn sheep in North America. They are just absolutely monstrous. We had three ewes. We weighed all of our sheep. We had three ewes that tipped the scales at over 180 pounds, females. As a comparison, 11.5-year-old ram that was harvested in North Dakota last year weighed 210. So these females are approaching the size of our ram. They're just absolutely monstrous, which is, again, why we were interested in these sheep for our harsh winters, harsh landscape. You know, they should have no problem acclimating North Dakota.
Brett Weedman, bighorn sheep biologist for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, talking about where and how the latest bighorn sheep were relocated into North Dakota. When I grew up, watching Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, it was always cool to see how they captured the animals. Brett Weedman will explain next on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear, former game warden, current biologist, and the host of this weekend walk on the wild side. Still to come on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live, we'll get you updated with a Minnesota Outdoors report with CJ Johnson, also Pat Stocktill. Each week gives us a better idea of what's going on across the prairies of North Dakota with a Central Dakota Outdoors report. We're joined by Brett Weedman. He is a Fargo North graduate, an NDSU graduate, a North Dakota native, as you can tell from that. Former classmate of mine, I proudly say that. And he is the one and only bighorn sheep biologist for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. And we talked earlier in the program about where these sheep came from and why and what goes into the process of relocating and importing bighorn sheep into North Dakota. Brett, I know from other methodologies that helicopters and net guns are the Marlin Perkins way of doing business. How about these bighorn sheep? What methodology do you use to get them to North Dakota?
Recent years, we've been using a lot of helicopter captures where we net gun from helicopters. This was unique in that they use drop nets. So about a week before we arrive, they'll begin putting out alfalfa for the sheep to attract them to bait sites and then set up a drop net. And then all the sheep are there, and you can see they come right into that alfalfa. You know, it's a crusty snow, and it's tough for them to get to their forage, and they see that alfalfa, and they just come running right in. So we did have one minor glitch in that one of the charges on the drop net didn't detonate. The net's supposed to come straight down, and it didn't detonate, which kind of slung the net over. A few sheep escaped, and then they all kind of piled up into one ball. So
sure.
So that was a little bit of a glitch. But all in all, we processed and loaded 25 sheep in 91 minutes, which is, you know, under 5 minutes per sheep. So all in all, it went very well. There were 99 people at the capture, and we needed every single one of them. There is no doubt about it. Just carrying these sheep, I mean, three people can barely carry one of these animals. They're just...
Well, you get them captured, you get them loaded, you get them to North Dakota, and how are our new bighorn sheep residents doing?
Yeah, unfortunately we captured two males and 23 females, 25 total. Unfortunately, at the release, we did have a female with an injured leg. And the vets took a look at her, and we decided to put her down. Probably wasn't going to survive. But on a very good news is that the remaining 24 animals came out of the trailers in great shape. They really handled the trip well. And what's even better for my side is usually when we release sheep, even from Montana, wherever, you know, they'll scatter. Out of 25 sheep, you might get 5 or 10 that just take off, and they might be 25 miles away. So we usually fly every day for 2 weeks to locate those sheep. And so far, these sheep, they're literally within 300 yards of the release site altogether. So no flying. I drive out here. There they are, standing there, count them up, check the frequencies, you know, check for mortalities, that sort of thing.
They're and all.
Where they mine, the company, Bighorn Wildlife Technologies, they manage the sheep on the mine. It's an active coal mine called Tech Coal. And these sheep live on the coal mine. We're talking the giant coal trucks, and they mine the coal. And the coal company is very sensitive and about wildlife habitat. So they'll mine the coal and then basically build bighorn sheep habitat. They'll build escape terrain and foraging areas and that sort of thing. Sure. And so but it's not hunted. So when you bait these sheep, you can see how they come right by it. For me as a wild sheep junkie, just to be 6 feet from these giant rams and these big sheep was a thrill. But it is the wilds of northern Alberta. So these sheep are hunted by grizzly bears, wolves, mountain lions, and cougars up there as well. So they're not, you look at the vid, it's a little deceptive where we're thinking, boy, are we, you know, bringing these things in here and they're going to be sitting ducks. But no, sure. They're chased by large carnivores their whole life. So they shouldn't have a problem with that.
Brett Weedman, Bighorn sheep biologist, our guest on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. Brett, let's take a big picture look at bighorn sheep in North Dakota, the current status.
Okay, presently we have around 330 bighorn sheep prior to this translocation. We brought in those break sheep from Montana. They have just done incredibly well. They're really taken off. In fact, we released the Montana break sheep to the west of us. They're about 5 miles that way. And actually, the Montana rams, this is our summer range right behind us. They're probably out there somewhere looking at us. And then the Alberta sheep, just a few miles to the east of here. So we have about 330 sheep. The Montana sheep are, you know, robust population growth. So now with these, that puts us at about 350 sheep. So last year in 2012, we had a record lamb recruitment. And then summer of 2013, we had a record lamb crop. So our bighorns are doing really well.
So the here now is looking pretty good. I know you don't do relocations, importations every single year. What's the future plans?
Well, we'll see how these go. We'll monitor them. If they do nearly as well as they did in Nebraska. And by the way, we really got to thank our colleagues from Nebraska Game and Parks and Nevada Department of Wildlife. They sent us all their permits, the process they went through, which saved me, you know, weeks. This is a valuable resource, bighorn sheep. And talking to the people in Alberta, you know, everyone's very friendly and thrilled, really, that they can, you know, take their sheep and help, you know, states like these sheep. That's now over 400 bighorn sheep that have been translocated from Lusker Mine where we caught these. They've gone, you know, North Dakota, Nevada, South Dakota, Nebraska, New Mexico. They've got Montana. They've gone all over the place. So down in the United States, we have a lot of thanks to give to the Canadians. Of course, a lot of sheep have been exported from British Columbia as well. So we'll monitor these sheep. If they do as well as they've done in Nebraska, we'll certainly look at maybe heading up there again if they still have too many sheep on the mine. The reason being is that the mine is unhunted. You know, it'll grow to over 1,000 bighorn sheep on that mine. And with bighorns, you want to kind of keep those densities low. So they, instead of hunting, which isn't feasible there, they trap them and export them to other areas. We had a real paradigm shift. Like I say, in 2006, we brought in those break sheep. We're through these three severe winters that really decimated mule deer and pronghorn and whitetails. These big bighorns, they're no problem. You know, they continue to grow in population. Actually, what's pretty remarkable is those break sheep from Montana, they actually outperform our mule deer as far as recruitment of young. I mean, that's how well they're doing. So they're definitely going in the right direction with bighorn sheep for sure.
And that is good news to all of North Dakota, because there's been a lot of eyes on bighorn sheep with the changes in the landscape and the land use in western North Dakota, the expansion of energy development, and bighorn sheep have definitely caught the attention of a lot of people. So it's good to hear that the bighorn sheep population is doing well And good to catch up with Brett Weedman, an old classmate of mine, a Fargo North graduate, on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. Pat Stockdale with the Central Dakota Outdoors Report joins us next on the Mighty 790 KFGO. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. Still to come on this weekend edition of Outdoors Live, we will get you updated with a Central Dakota Outdoors report with Pat Stockdale. Pat Stockdale will be bringing you the latest from the outdoor scene across. Things have changed quite rapidly over the last week with a transition from just what seemed like the grips of winter and ice fishing to definitely keeping your eyes to the sky for those first snow geese to start showing up. Maybe they already have. Maybe they have, and I've missed it so far, but we'll keep you updated here on the Mighty 790 KFGO, and CJ Johnson will get you updated on the Minnesota outdoors. They're in more of a transition season with their panfish season still open, their walleye season shut down for every place except for some of the border waters, Lake of the Woods. Their walleye season continues on, but CJ Johnson will give us an update from there as well. Speaking of snow geese, the nuts and bolts for this spring snow goose season, you can hunt with last fall's license. You can buy your new combination license or small game, general game, and habitat license, but you can hunt with last year's license. It's only open to light geese. We're talking snows, blues, and Rosses. Canada geese, closed. White-fronted geese, closed. Your shooting hours are a half hour before sunrise to 30 minutes after sunset. So you've got a half hour before the sun comes up till half an hour after sunset. There is no daily bag limit for snow geese. There is no possession limit. You can use electronic and recorded calls. You can unplug your shotgun. You can use a shotgun capable of holding more than three shells during the light goose season. Waterfall rest areas are not in effect for the spring season. You do need to have, however, non-toxic shot. So you don't need to have a duck stamp. You do need to have steel shot, non-toxic shot. I shouldn't say steel because there's a lot of stuff out there. And let's see, what else am I missing on the nuts and bolts of it? One thing I will say that's not in the regulations is, in the interest of sportsman-landowner relationships, do your best to stay on the hard surfaced roads. Even though it's been a relatively precipitation-free spring, winter, we didn't have a lot of snow yet. You can always get some more. But anytime the frost starts coming out and the snow starts melting, we put together the recipe for some possible rut-type situations. And the best thing that you can do is to park on a hard surface. And a lot of guys and gals are using some of the other equipment to get themselves through there. Some ATVs. ATVs rip stuff up too. So be careful with that, but do the best that you can. That's all we can ask. And understand from a landowner, in the light of a landowner, understand that it's not always hunters that are the ones that are driving down roads, especially across all of North Dakota with pipelines and wind development and energy development. And there's so much going on. And sometimes it might even be just the neighbor kid coming home from a basketball tournament or whatever, from an evening dance, and takes a wrong turn and ends up going down a section line and locks her into four-wheel drive. And the next thing you know, Sunday morning, you see some pretty heavy ruts in a spot that shouldn't have been. It's so easy to quickly just, wow, it's the hunters. It's not always the case, okay? Enough of the soapbox on that one. Let's welcome Pat Stockdale back to the program. She's a regular feature on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. You read her work in Minnesota Outdoor News and Dakota Country Magazine. She is a very well accomplished and respected outdoors communicator, and she joins us each week. Pat, what's cooking outdoors this week?
Welcome to the Central Dakota Outdoors Report, a look at fishing and outdoor activities throughout eastern North Dakota and the Missouri River system. As we approach the coming days of spring, it finally feels like, yes, spring might actually happen this year. And the warm weather is bringing some anglers out onto the ice. However, the warm weather also means there's snow on the ice that's melting, and it's creating slush and water. It's that time of year, folks, when anglers need to keep an eye on those muddy and slushy shorelines even though, ironically, auger extensions are still a must on many area lakes because that ice is actually still in good condition. However, it could change dramatically as our warm weather continues. Devil's Lake continues offering up good perch success. Drill holes in 25 to 50 feet and move around to locate schools. Walleye remain decent, and those anglers looking for pike are also finding good success. Yes, access remains good, but there's that water and slush. Jamestown Reservoir is fair for crappie and perch. Look for some walleye and perch activity on Spiritwood Lake. However, much of the attention in the southeast remains on small area lakes. Again, watch for slush and water on top of the ice on many lakes across Richland, Ransom, Sargent, Lemoore, Barnes, and Cass counties. Fair to good perch success continues in mid-range depths using simple setups such as hook and waxworm, perch eye, or minnow. Success is spotty throughout the day, with some anglers reporting better action shortly before sunset and right again before sunrise. Move around and mark fish to find the schools rather than just sitting there and waiting. Walleye are still deep and hitting on bright jigs and minnows. However, pike remains the steadiest action. Try smelt with tip-ups in shallow water, but don't hesitate to mix up bait presentations. Stay away from area rivers with spring runoff waters coming in. And speaking of rivers, the Missouri River is still quiet, although look for activity around the Washburn area as we get some open water. The tail race has scattered and light success at best. Lake Audubon and Lake Sakakawea also remain fair, but watch the shorelines along those two lakes as well. And finally, it's time to look towards the sky. Canada geese are trickling in along the Missouri River system, and light geese should be on the move soon with the nicer weather. Take the time to enjoy the marvel that is our spring migration.
Always appreciate the insight from Pat Stockdale with a Central Dakota Outdoors report. And as I mentioned, with snow geese and ice fishing, and you get the picture that regardless of what the temperatures are like, what the ice conditions are like, you don't make 40 inches of ice in a week. You don't get rid of 40 inches of ice in a week. And we've said it. But this weekend, spearfishing closes, ice shack removal deadline. Doesn't mean that ice fishing is over with. It doesn't mean that fishing ends. It just means that you can no longer leave your permanent shack out there on the lake or the slough or whatever it might be. And the way this spring has been going, you really want to make sure that you can get it off of there, because with slush and water moving around, it can make it almost impossible in a real quick hurry, or it goes back into freezing and you end up locking it in to where it was at. Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, spring is on the way. Spring turkey season starts April 12th. Before we get there, CJ Johnson joins us with a Minnesota Outdoors report coming up next on the Mighty 790 KFGO. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. The last shot this week, but we'll be back next weekend with another full hour of outdoors news and information. Just ahead, we have CJ Johnson waiting in the wings with a Minnesota Outdoors report. Good news coming from Becker Soil and Water Conservation District. Almost $400,000 secured in Clean Water Sea Legacy grant funds, and a lot of interest. And a lot of interest as 50 landowners attended a recent meeting hosted by the Becker Water Conservation District. And some of the lakes like Boyer, Marshall, LaBelle, Forget-Me-Not, Stinking Lime, Gottenburg have all been identified by Minnesota Pollution Control with problems with excess nutrients in the water. And there's not a flash, lightning bolt way of dealing with this. There's a lot of different possibilities, what they call best management practices with filter strips, sediment control basins, shoreline buffers, wetland restoration that can go to help improve water quality overall. And it's so many, there's so many projects. This is just one, but these go on countywide and your soil and water conservation districts in North Dakota and in Minnesota. Here's just one example of right now working together for the betterment of the future. And it benefits not just the people that live there, but the drinking water, the fish, and the wildlife as well. So it's definitely some good news coming out of Becker County. And now for a look at the outdoors recreation activity. What's going on outdoors in Minnesota? Well, the mid part of March is typically kind of a downtime. Even if the temperatures are warming up, folks like to get out there and anticipate spring, a little bit of pan fishing. Well, you know what? Rather than me tell you, each week at this time, we connect with CJ Johnson. He is a Lisbon, North Dakota native and has spent his career covering the outdoors for Minnesota. And he does just that for us each and every week here on the Mighty 790 KFGO. CJ Johnson, how's things looking outdoors in Minnesota this week, my friend?
Well, not too bad, by golly. But as you say, it's mostly panfish action, even all across Minnesota. Except way up the northern regions, up near the Canadian border, there's still some chances to pick up some walleye and sauger. But looking around right now, we'll take a look first at Leech Lake. Up there, Reed Sporting Goods says that the perch action seems to be improving, mainly in the Grassy Point, Duck Point, and the Goose Island Flats in 6 to 14 feet of water. Now, if you're not really sure about Leech Lake and all these places, again, ask a bait shop. They'll tell you how to get there. North Walker Bay, also up in Leech Lake, is giving up perch in 10 to 12 feet of water. And look to Shinogamy Bay for crappies. They're 20 feet down, and a few tulabies are starting to get, I guess, during morning hours, especially on the east end of Stony Point, over very deep water in that case. Now, the Nisswa Guide League over in Brainerd and the Nisswa area say they can look for crappies up there on the Highway 371 Bay. It's marked over 8 to 10 feet down, however, or you can check the Merrifield end in 15 to 18 feet of water, both of these spots on North Long Lake in the Brainerd area. Now, you have to do some sorting, but perch are hitting an 8 to 15 feet out on the Highway 371 access to Gull Lake as well. Sunfish action has improved in 6 to 10 feet on Round Lake and on Nisswa Lake as well. Wilmer area, over there, Brad Zabaitchap says fishing reports have been somewhat limited due to an inability to travel on most of the lakes. However, Diamond Lake is a few roads, and it's producing sunfish and perch during the day. Crappies at night, they're all down about 18 to 22 feet of water right now in the Wilmer area. Paul Nelson in Bemidji says the spring melt has begun in the Bemidji area, and there is plenty of ice left on the lakes. In fact, he says more than 30 inches of ice shows up in many, many areas up near Bemidji. Problem is the slush on the top of the ice and heavy snowpack melts. Perch numbers are down. Many of the larger lakes with numbers of jumbo perch hard to find this spring, however, that should improve, too, a little bit more as the slush really allows more people out on the water. Jamie Hanton in Otter Tail Lakes Country says public accesses in the north side of all those lakes are quite easy to get through right now, and the drifting and hard-packed snow that have clogged the access areas now are really quite open, and you can get out on the lakes out there pretty nice. Since pan fishing is slow right now, tulabee seems to have picked up in the Otter Tail Lakes area, and they're typically found suspended over a lot of deep holes. If you find them, fish, a half to three-quarters away off the bottom, and you will start picking up tulabies in the Otter Tail Lakes area. Becca Arndt's office in Detroit Lakes says the area had the best weather this past weekend they've had in months, and she says many anglers were out in portables or just standing or sitting on buckets on the ice. Sunfish have been the most chased fish right now, and anglers are finding them in shallow green weeds at this time of the year. Fishing with small jigs with plastic tails or wax worms, both vertical jigging and bobbers have been working really good right now. And, Doug, I remember growing up in that river town of Lisbon, North Dakota, and it was just, I had amazing, amazing memories down there, most of them related to water, of course, of the Cheyenne River.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one day, I was about, maybe 10 years old, I was sitting under a tree out in our front yard, and I saw Mr. Fugel. He was a Finnish man. He was going for his morning walk. As he walked past another neighbor's house, that was Ole Skotten, a Norwegian, he saw a sign that said, boat for sale. Well, Ole was really an elderly, retired Norwegian farmer who pretty much just tended to his garden and his yard. Also, the sign confused Mr. Fugel because he knew that Ole didn't own a boat.
Mm.
Yeah, well, about that time, Ole came around the back of the house to the front where Mr. Fugle was standing. Mr. Fugle said, Ole, I noticed a sign in your boat that says, our yard that says boat for sale. They both talk really funny with their accent. But Mr. Fugle says, Ole, you ain't never been fishing and you don't got no boat. All you got is that old John Deere tractor and a combine. Well, he said, yeah, sure, you betcha. And you know something? They're boats for sale. Whoops. Remember, the fishing's always good. That's the catch we got to work on.
Oh, it took me a second on that one, CJ, but the pickup was right behind, ready to go. Good stuff, CJ Johnson. Thank you so much. We appreciate we love the outdoors information from Minnesota. And we appreciate the humor that you bring right along with it. CJ Johnson with the Minnesota Outdoors Report. CJ, thanks so much for your time, my friend.
My pleasure, Doug.
Well, that's going to wrap things up for this weekend edition of Outdoors Live. A big thank you going out to CJ Johnson and to Pat Stockdale. Don't forget, you can get Outdoors Live podcasts available at kfgo.com. You can email me, outdoorslive@gmail.com. And a big thank you goes out to Bob Harris. He's the executive producer of the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. Until next time, I'm Doug Lear, reminding you, as always, keep your lines tight and your powder dry. Have a great one out there.